Welcome to a very special, for all the wrong reasons, edition of Locked On Grizzlies. David Fizdale fired as Grizzlies head coach. We're going to talk about it for the next few minutes here on the podcast. My name is Peter Edmiston. Thank you for downloading the pod. Thank you for listening. And if you're a Grizzly fan, I'm sorry. I'm sorry because it's been rough. Been a rough few days for Grizzly fans, and Monday was certainly a very rough one indeed. David Fizdale fired. Stunning developments. Really out of, I'm not going to say out of nowhere, but the timing of this was pretty extraordinary. The speed with which this thing happened was really unprecedented, and now there's a lot of questions. I know you have a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions, too. I will endeavor to answer some of them to the best of my ability. There will be, to kind of give you the basics of what happened, David Fizdale was fired. J.B. Bickerstaff will take over. My information is that he will take over for the remainder of the season, that they're not going to search for any kind of a permanent replacement until the offseason, and perhaps J.B. would stay on, who knows. But J.B. Bickerstaff will be the guy for the remainder of this season, in all likelihood. There will be a press conference at 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning. Most of you are probably listening to this on Tuesday morning. So 10 o'clock, a press conference to explain more about what happened. We'll find out maybe a little more information at that point, but I don't know how much information we're really going to find out in this whole situation. And in the course, the Grizzlies have a very, very difficult schedule upcoming when the actual basketball gets back and gets going. J.B. Bickerstaff will take over practice. The Grizzlies will practice on Tuesday, and they get ready for, they'll travel to San Antonio as well on Tuesday afternoon. They'll play the Spurs in San Antonio on Wednesday, then back at home on Friday in Bickerstaff's first home game as Grizzlies head coach. So with the basics kind of out there now, there are, to me, four questions that I will endeavor to answer over the next few minutes in this edition of Locked On Grizzlies, and then we'll have some conclusions and have a few more things at the end. The questions are pretty simple. Number one, how did we get here? Number two, what happened yesterday? Number three, where do things go from here? And number four, whose fault is all this anyway? So let's go one by one. First of all, how did we get to this point? Some of this we have talked about in previous pods. I said yesterday on the pod that I felt like, you know, it was a coin flip at this point, whether Fizdale stayed or went, or whether the Grizzlies tried to do something with Mark. You know, I felt like I described Fizdale's moves as suicidal at the end of his reign, but I did not think it would be so fast. But we got here because of the lack of a relationship between Marc Gasol and David Fizdale. You know, this has been brewing for quite some time. Those two guys never really saw eye to eye. I don't think there was any kind of a personal animosity between them or anything like that. I don't think that they would try to fight each other. They didn't talk a lot. You know, they weren't super good pals or anything, but I mean, they would go to functions together. They would be cordial and social in that sense. So it's not like there was some kind of hatred. It's just that philosophically, from basketball perspective, Mark really did not agree with David Fizdale, didn't see the way that he approached the game as productive and positive and the right thing to do. You know, he felt like some of the techniques that he used to motivate players were over the top. He felt like the fact that he wanted players like him to be involved in the actual management process and the actual game planning and, you know, defensive schemes and the real nuts and bolts of it, you know, that's not Mark. He didn't want to do that. He pushed back against that when he was directly asked by Fizdale last year repeatedly to do that. Then Mark would complain about how things were going, and Fizdale took that, you know, kind of personally and said, okay, well, you know, if you're not going to actually do this and you're going to complain about it, then what are you trying to accomplish here? What are you going for? You know, if you're going to, it's the old saying of, you know, when the guys, you're going out to dinner and you make somebody else pick the restaurant, you don't get to bitch about it when you don't like the food. It's kind of how Fizdale felt. But in the spite of all this, in spite of the way that, you know, Mark also didn't like the way that Fiz would be public with some of the stuff that with some of the criticisms and some of the ways that he would handle the team. You know, Mark is not a guy that likes to make certain things public, team interactions being one of them. And he would get irritated with Fizdale and would get irritated with having to respond when some people in the media would ask, well, Fizdale said this, what do you think about that? Mark hates that stuff. So that was something that he felt bothered by as well. All this just made for a very difficult relationship, but they were trying to repair it. You know, Fizdale had pushed too hard last year to make Mark a captain. Mark is not that kind of a leader. He's not a rah-rah guy. He's not a positive guy generally. He's pretty negative, pretty critical, not a guy that's going to, you know, give a big rallying cry speech, go get him team, all that's just not, that's not him. And I think Fizdale thought he could force that on him, and he couldn't. But he seemed to have learned from that. They talked after Mark kind of had comments in Eurobasket that were a little bit controversial, could be interpreted as somewhat critical of the organization. Fizdale goes over to Romania to talk to Mark directly, and they have a chat and seems to kind of, you know, get things going in the right direction, seems to smooth things over just a little bit. And at the beginning of the year, David Fizdale goes out of his way to compliment Mark on the way that he's handled things. You know, even when the games were going poorly, he had a press conference probably 3 weeks ago where Fizdale, that game, if you remember the game where Mike Conley sat, I think it was Orlando, where Mike Conley was rested and the Grizzlies lost and didn't look good. It was the one where Mario Chalmers and Fiz almost got in a fight. Fiz went out of his way in that press conference to talk about how Mark was such a positive influence on the huddles. Mark was positive in this, positive in that. You know, he really went over the top in his attempt to try to placate Mark. But that only lasted so long. And it just wasn't working. They didn't talk much. They weren't super connected. And as a coach, man, if you don't connect with your best player, it's going to cost you. You just cannot, you cannot survive that situation. And that's kind of how we got to the point where it was so fractious. Now, we go to the second question here, the question about what happened over the last 24 hours. We'll get to that next. So what happened? What happened in this whole thing? How did this go down? Well, you know, you saw, and we talked about it yesterday on the podcast. You know, some people, I don't think, realized the depth of the frustration, the irritation, the disconnect between Mark and Fizdale. But that's where those of us that are around these guys a lot kind of can give you a little heads up on that. This was a lot more than just a garden variety disagreement about playing time. This was a message, without a doubt, that was being sent by David Fizdale, and Mark got it loud and clear. Took it personally and made it personal very quickly in the aftermath of all of this. David Fizdale was let go, and the organization had their misgivings, according to information that I have gleaned, let's just say, from folks that are pretty well connected. The organization was concerned about the direction of the team long before last couple games, but really the Dallas game and the Brooklyn game especially were big red flags to them that stuff was really not right. Those are games you need to win. And the fact they didn't displayed where things were going wrong. But if you go back and look at the team after the All-Star break last year, things were pretty rough. This is a team that's, you know, kind of stagnated or gotten worse, you know, well under 500 in that time. Is that because of injury? In part, sure. But even when they were relatively healthy, they didn't look all that great. They didn't really feel like they were playing at their best. You never saw them really connect and come together and develop that identity and play for Fizdale in that way. You just didn't see that from this group. So that's the backdrop from the organizational standpoint to what happened and to where we were. Fiz was already, to them, on pretty thin ice before all this happens. Then, as we discuss, you decide that you're going to not play Marc Gasol in the fourth quarter of this game and not to tell him about that, in spite of the fact that Fizdale talked to Zach Randolph, you know, about benching him, in spite of the fact that Fizdale talked to Tony Allen a number of different times about, you know, the way that he played, talked to a lot of players about a lot of different things. Sometimes those players didn't like that very much, but he had no problem pushing their buttons. He had no problem talking with them and explaining to them what was going on. The fact that he didn't do that with Mark, the fact that he didn't do it before, the fact that he didn't do it during the game, the fact that he didn't do it after the game, tells you what you need to know. That was Fizdale trying to send a message to Mark and not really being concerned about how that message was going to be received. That was a guy that kind of seemed to be at the end of his rope. And I thought that it was suicidal in terms of your job, because you can't do that to your best player, the guy that's making 12 or 13 times the money you're making, the guy that the organization has invested a hell of a lot more money in. You can't do that and survive. I didn't think it would happen so quickly, but you can't do that and survive. And Fizdale obviously didn't. From Mark's perspective, you heard the quotes. I played them in full for you yesterday. Mark said, "I'm not going to take this lying down." And he didn't. 2 + 2 = 4, a lot of times, guys. There's no need to get too complicated and dig into the weeds on this thing. There's one player, well, two players, but one healthy player who has a very good relationship with Robert Parra, the owner, or the controlling owner of the Grizzlies, and that is Marc Gasol. Mike Conley does as well, but the rest of the guys don't. Mark and Parra, by Mark's admission, do text from time to time. Same thing with Mike Conley. The star player, Marc Gasol, gets mad, says he's not going to take this lying down. Less than 24 hours later, the coach is fired. Is it entirely plausible that Mark talked to, texted, communicated with Robert Parra and asked him to make this move? Absolutely it is. I don't know whether that's what happened or not. I have no way to prove that or to tell you that that's the way it went down. But it certainly has every appearance of that. And that's the organization isn't really going out of its way to deny that, to push back against that, really. Maybe they will at this press conference later on. But for now, at least, that's the narrative. And it rings true. And the fact that it happened so quickly really puts the spotlight squarely on Mark. I mean, this was less than 12 hours, really, from when all this stuff was happening. You fire a coach that previously you were allegedly, as an organization, supporting and weren't going to fire. And again, depending on who you talk to, less than a week ago, was not in danger. Some people will see that differently, but that was the information that was largely out there. So, of course, that's going to fall back on Mark. And I'm telling you, Mark has to own this. I will be very interested to hear what Mark has to say on Tuesday, because he has to own this. He has to explain it. He has to talk about what happened. He has to create a convincing discussion about what happened, why it needed to happen, to talk about what, if anything, he was involved in. He has to do this, because there is much more coach killing evidence out there on Mark than there was on Penny Hardaway or LeBron with regard to David Blatt, or there's any number of those guys. There's this stuff with Mark is pretty much like dead solid, very obvious ABC stuff. Very simple to follow the line and to see what could have and may well have happened. Again, I don't know. I wasn't there. Nobody knows. I don't have Mark's phone. I don't have Paris' phone. I don't know. But this is not the usual course of action. This is not the way that well-run organizations handle their business. We'll get to that part later on, too. This is not the way that good organizations do things. So, you go on from here, but this is a sign that something is wrong. One guy that was an interested observer was LeBron James, who weighed in after the Cavs' comfortable win in Philly on Monday night. He weighed in on his friend, assistant coach for the Heat, a guy that has been longtime friends and compadres with LeBron and D-Wade and all those guys, David Fizdale. LeBron, like a lot of people, was confused about what happened.
Me?
Yeah.
Just took me by surprise, or everybody in the basketball world? Probably everybody in the basketball world besides who pulled the trigger.
Can you process it?
I cannot. And it's funny that I just said that quote this morning about Philly, about how people want overnight success right now, and you know, everybody wants instant oatmeal, and they've allowed Brett Brown here to be able to just give him time and give him time. And Memphis over the last couple of years have been a very, very good team. Either when Jaeger was coaching them, or now with Fizz, but Mike Conley has been in and out a lot, and we all know he's the head of the snake down there. And when he gets hurt, things just always kind of doesn't look well. And I don't know the details of it because I'm not around, but I know the type of coach Fizz is. I know how players relate to him, and I know what he stands for. And he don't stand for no. Maybe that's what it was because he ain't going to kiss nobody's ass. I know that.
Thanks,
maybe
everybody.
That's what it was.
I can't blame him for being confused, and that's going to be the reputation that's going out there. LeBron reacted. Steven Jackson on Instagram, for whatever that's worth, had a spat with Chandler Parsons. He called out Chandler Parsons directly. Parsons responded. Steven Jackson questioned Parsons' heart and questioned keeping Parsons but firing Fizdale. Of course, there's nothing they can do to get rid of Parsons at this point. They can easily fire Fizdale. Eat that money, no problem. You can't eat Chandler Parsons' money. But that wasn't the point of what he was trying to say about Parsons. So he's going in. you got a lot of people on the outside of the situation, not fully understanding what happened, really critical of the Grizzlies. You know, where they go from here, obviously JB Bickerstaff is going to take over in the short term, but they have to repair their reputation as an organization. Two of the last three coaches that were fired have been Grizzly coaches. And while the situation with Dave Yeager, there is a lot of extenuating circumstance that was involved in all of that. Dave Yeager had fault in that, as he was certainly reaching out and trying to get more money and get a deal somewhere else. The Grizzlies were not interested in, you know, continuing with him, and there's all blame to be on both sides, and it's a more complicated thing than just a guard variety firing. This is as well complicated, but doesn't matter. The reputation that you have as an organization now is one of instability, and it's a well-earned reputation. You can't have four coaches in Robert Pera's time and not be considered unstable. He hasn't been here that long. That's a problem. And the way they've handled the exits has been a problem too. The communication or lack thereof with Lionel Hollins, a lot of that could be laid at the feet of Jason Levien, but it still ultimately stems back to Robert Pera. The squabbles and lack of communication with Dave Yeager, certainly that was very much partly the organization's fault, and again, it goes back up to Robert Pera. Same thing is true with David Fizdale and how abruptly and stunningly this thing was handled. Again, Robert Pera. Now you have JB Bickerstaff, and who knows how that thing's going to play out. The one through line in this whole thing is Robert Pera, who is, a little weird, a bit flaky. He's done some things that are a little bizarre. He's had a reputation for, in the case of the Grizzlies, saying one thing but not necessarily following through with it. You know, the Wi-Fi stuff was very slow. The fact that he said he was going to be very transparent with the fans, and that has not happened. The whole thing, I mean, Jason Levien's situation at the end of that was very bizarre, how that was handled. The rumors and discussion that were out there and stories that were written about Robert Pera early on and how he was doing some things that were very unconventional. You couple all that stuff with what's happened to these coaches and you start to get a very bad reputation as an organization. That's something they're going to have to deal with. That's something they're going to have to think about and going to have to fix. From a team perspective, I think JB Bickerstaff, his reputation is very good. He did a fine job as an interim in Houston. He had injury issues to deal with there as well. I mean, this team, as it's constructed, and the actual guys that are rolling out right now, the rosters that they're putting out there, are not good enough to win NBA games. I don't care who's coaching. There's only so much you can do with some of these rosters. I think Fizdale could have done a better job with a lot of them, but there's a limit to what you can expect with this group. They could have played harder, sure. They could have played with more spirit, absolutely. There could have been more of a cohesive strategy, yes. I think all those things are true. Fizdale could be liable for those things, for sure. But the limit is there. You can't expect a lot from this group. You're not going to get a lot from this group. And that's not on Fizdale. And it won't be on JB Bickerstaff either. It shouldn't be. When you see the rest of the schedule and the way that it goes, they got to play harder, though. And new coaches tend to get that bump, tend to get that new coach honeymoon push when the players realize, okay, well, you know, now this guy's fired. Let's bump it up. Things are changing around here. Typically, new coaches get that. That may help them through some of this, but this is still a team that's bad, and they look bad. They look like a 7-12 team. They are a 7-12 team. Who knows what happens with Mike Conley when he comes back? Chandler Parsons, fingers crossed that the information on the knee is good. Apparently, it's nothing big, but you know, you won't know for sure until he's back out there and actually playing. They are in the midst of a serious, serious set of problems, and it absolutely could get worse before it gets better. This team could go on a big-time losing streak. It's already at 8. It could get into the double digits very easily and then on into a very big number if they're not careful based on the schedule that's upcoming. JB's first job is to get everybody on side, to get everybody on his side, is to get everybody calmed down. And Mark Gasol in particular pushing along with everyone else in the same direction and out there fighting, showing that spirit. That's step one. That will at least get you moving in the right direction. From there, I don't know, man. I don't know. A lot of it is still predicated on getting those guys back and healthy. If they don't, then there is a serious limit on what this team can do. So we wait. We see what happens with Mike Conley. Now, to the final question. Whose fault is it anyway? Who do you blame? That's a tricky one. Number one, the guy that has skated for way too long on this whole thing is Chris Wallace. I talked about it on the pod a month ago, plus how he continues to remain in his position is crazy to me. You need to make that change. It's just time. The track record with first round picks is enough. The way that things have been handled this past offseason was a problem. The one before is rapidly becoming an all-time disaster because you saw the signing of Chandler Parsons. Again, that alone would get some GMs fired. You go and sign David Fizdale and you put your reputation out there. This is the guy. This is our guy that's going to, you know, take it and take us into a new era. And he's going to be all about, you know, going from grit and grind into this new thing. And there's, you know, he's going to work with us and he's going to be more of a guy that embraces it and is part of the collaborative efforts of this entire front office. And you fire him in 101 games. The guy doesn't even get a season and a quarter because you are unhappy with him. And you have lost faith in him. Well, that is a real indictment, not only on that coach, but on the guy that hired that coach. You couple that with the draft, and the fact that you've already cut Wade Baldwin, your first round pick from that 2016 draft. You've already cut Roddy Zagorats, the guy that you went out and traded a first round pick to go and get along with Deonte Davis, who finally is hopefully, fingers crossed, showing a little sign of positivity, but it's been a rocky road for Deonte. All that happened in the offseason last year. Those things alone would get a lot of GMs fired. Go back to the track record the Grizzlies have had in the first round for the last decade. Terrible. And do you have faith that if the Grizzlies have to rebuild, that's the guy that should be leading the way? That's the guy that should be making those picks? It's crazy. You saw what Tennessee fans did in college football when they didn't like the way that their organization handled hiring a coach. They revolted. Grizzly fans, I think if they were to look closely at it, would be within their rights to have some concerns about the guy that's leading the way in the front office that's making these decisions. There's only so much you can get out of cobbling together second-round picks. So the blame part, to me, it starts there. It starts there. He can't get by without catching a lot of this blame. That wouldn't be fair. That wouldn't be fair to everyone involved. Part of the blame has to go to Robert Pera, because obviously his organizational style engenders a bit of a chaotic atmosphere. Obviously, the way this thing is handled and the way that we've seen these exits handled is not indicative of a guy that has a real firm control on this thing and a real good way of handling tough situations. Is it communication, the lack thereof? I don't know, but it doesn't seem to be a good situation. It doesn't seem to really be what you want from this organization. He's got to catch a little bit of this blame. Marc Gasol obviously has to get a huge amount of blame for Fizdale being fired. I mean, of course, that is a no-brainer. I mean, he's the one who has the big issue. He's the one who, in all likelihood, helped to orchestrate some of this stuff. He's the one who said he wasn't going to take this lying down. He's the one who didn't really go out of his way to have a good relationship with Fizdale until this year. He's the one who has played not really up to snuff. Even if you take into account the fact that he's played with a lot of subpar teammates, this hasn't been his best year either. And he hasn't been very good of late either on offense or on defense. He has to take the blame for that. Part of this is on David Fizdale. The inability to function with your best player is always going to make you vulnerable as a coach. Your inability to find a compromise with him makes you a target. Always. You can't survive without getting along with your best player. No coach can. That's been the NBA for decades. That's nothing new. So Mark is just another example of that, but that's the way that it goes. If you don't have a relationship with him, you're going to be in trouble. And Fizdale was in trouble and now is gone. Part of that is on him. The way that this thing was handled on Sunday with the benching, again, that's, to me, inexcusable as a coach. You have to communicate with your guy, even a guy you may not like or a guy you may not necessarily understand fully. You still have to go out of your way to push that and communicate and to be that guy. Why he wouldn't do that, I don't know. And it obviously was pretty detrimental to his employment. So I think, long story short, there's a little bit of blame to go around to everybody. No one should escape from this thing without catching some of it. But the Grizzlies have to change something. They can't keep doing stuff like this. Can't keep switching these coaches around. Can't keep this unstable situation. It's just not going to work. At the end of the day, the roster's not good enough and deep enough to survive all these injuries. That's part of it. The team lost faith very quickly in a coach that they had originally anointed as a hot young up-and-comer, a guy that was in line with their philosophies. They lost faith in him very, very quickly. They haven't really done much in the draft to bolster this group. To me, all that leads to the conclusion that it's the front office needs to take a lot more of the blame for the way this whole thing has gone down. That would be my conclusion. Secondly, Mark's going to have to live with this. Mark's going to have to live with this reputation now. Mark's going to be known as a coach killer. He's going to have to live with that. He's going to have to come out and explain why that's not the case. And as I've said, I think it's more complicated than that. There are very understandable reasons why Mark has felt a disconnect with David Fizdale, why he felt disrespected, obviously, on Sunday. All that is legit. There are legitimate reasons behind all of that. But the circumstances being what they are, he's going to get that rap, understandably so. It's on Mark to fix that. That's his fault. And so those are the guys that are going to stick around in Memphis. Those are the guys that are going to be taking this thing, presumably, on forward. People can talk about trading Mark and Mike all they want. We can all have those discussions. We can all fire up the trade machine, man. Go for it. Go crazy. It is very difficult right now to envision too many trades that make sense for the Grizzlies from a rebuilding standpoint and for the team that would take on Marc Gasol. Could you do something with the Wizards and their pick and, Gortat or something? Maybe. Could you do something with the Raptors and Valanciunas and Ananobi and the pick? Maybe. Could you? You're not getting the Brooklyn pick from the Cavs. That is not going to happen. Just isn't. So forget that. What value does Marc Gasol have right now? Particularly with this reputation now. What value does Mike Conley have, given his age now, injury history, and this nagging Achilles thing that has been a problem for him, for a number of months, going back a couple seasons? What's the market like for the 30-year-old smaller point guard who has those things and who's on a huge contract? What I'm saying is I don't know what kind of choice you have. I don't think you're choosing not to make those trades necessarily. That choice is made for you. You don't necessarily have the alternative, I don't think. Even if you wanted to, I'm not sure that that's an alternative you could follow. You got to make the best of things where you are. They may be able to tank even with these guys the way they're playing. Should they do that? Maybe. I mean, that's probably the best course of action when you have your pick to try to go and get. I mean, in a loaded draft, this draft upcoming is phenomenal. To go and get a Luka Doncic, to go and get a Bagley, to find one of these guys that's out there right now. There's a lot to like. So, maybe that's something you should do, but it's hard to accept that right now. They're just a mess. It's a mess, and I wish I had more concrete information for you. I don't, but we'll see, and hopefully get a little more on Tuesday and put this thing together, put the pieces together. But I can understand Grizzly fans being bummed out and frustrated and concerned about the direction of the team. I think that's justifiable. Thanks for joining me here on Locked On Grizzlies. Thanks for listening. Thanks for all the props too and the heads up. I got a chance to get on NBA TV yesterday. If you missed it, it's on their website. Check it out. It's on their Twitter feed as well. I should also point out too, by way of a goodbye or final message or whatever about David Fizdale, on a personal level, I just think the world of him as a person. He's a really good guy. Good family guy. Good, a guy that you would trust to handle, your financial affairs. Very trustworthy, very, straightforward guy when it comes to his dealings. Lot of fun, very smart guy. Interesting guy, was very much involved with the community, got involved with the police in his PALS program, and tried to unify the community in a way that was very real, very hands-on. In addition to that, he was obviously speaking out against the Confederate statues that are still up in the city of Memphis. And I, for one, applaud him for that and for his stance on that. I think he was very clear about how he felt, and rightly so. I think that's it's an issue that we all, in my mind, need to get behind and to get those things down. So I applaud him for doing just that. I applaud all of those things. And I think that he really wanted to make Memphis a better city. And he really got down and dirty and got hands-on in that. And I think he was taking great pride in the MLK celebrations, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King. There was a lot of planning going in to make MLK 50 something very big and very special and positive, you know, in so many ways, such a horrifying, nightmarish, defining a moment, to try to turn it into a celebration of life and of growth and of possibility and of where things need to go. He was very much in favor of all of that, doing it right, appreciating and respecting the past and acknowledging the how far there is to go and to trying to get there. He was all about that. So, you know, before I kind of close the book on Fizdale, I just want that out there. He's a good dude. I will miss covering the guy. I didn't agree with everything he did. There would be legitimate debates about all that stuff, but just on a personal level, he's a really good guy. You can see why a lot of people really, like LeBron's and D-Wade's and those guys, really respect him. And I know he will go on and he will have success. And I don't think that the book is closed by any stretch on David Fizdale and what he's going to do in the NBA. You can hit me up on my Twitter feed at Peter Edmiston. Love to hear from you on this, and definitely want to hear your take on where things are. I got a ton of reaction already, and plenty more to come. We will talk about the press conference, about the game as well, and about whether the Grizzlies can end this 8-game losing streak. It's going to be tough, but we'll find out. So all of that is upcoming. Thanks for listening. Have a great Tuesday, everybody.